It is 7:06. You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. We're broadcasting live from the RowAutoGroup.com studio. Don't forget, our McVetty's Hearth and Home text line is 207-409-6172. You can find out more at StovesOfMaine.com. Well, it's Christmas, so I'm not going to play a little AC/DC, but I did ask him what was his favorite Christmas song, Christmas Carol. He said, "Oh, Come All Ye Faithful." It may not have been this version, but Dee Dee and I love Pentatonics, and this is a pretty decent modern version of that song. I love that song, "Oh, Come All Ye Faithful." Dr. Peter Earle, an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research, joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks very much. That's a great version. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I do too. They're, not everything you hear from them is done with their voice. Nothing, there's no musical instruments. It's really quite extraordinary when you think about it.
Yep. Really like it. That's my favorite one.
Yeah. You reached out to me about the assassination of the United Health CEO. And said you wanted to talk about that this morning. And so I've waited to say much about it because I really wanted to get your perspective on it.
Sure. Well, I mean, no sooner did the news come out than there were, like, packs, of braying, supporters and, bloodthirsty cries of, how this is a great thing and we need more of this. And I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely shocked. I thought there would be a little bit, but it's been a huge... There's seeming, wave of support for this this dirtbag who did this. And, of course, my first reaction was, I need to talk about, I have an article coming out. I need to talk about why it is that insurance has changed so much and why people hate insurance companies so much. I absolutely condemn any support or any sort of, tub-thumping of support for this guy who shot this CEO in the back of the street. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And we've all, anybody that's wanted to has seen the video. It was nothing but a cowardly act. And
I
guess
agree.
We're going to find out more as time goes on. I guess the guy has a quote-unquote manifesto. I mean, doesn't that sound, whenever, you remember the Unabomber? They have a manifesto. It's so odd to me that we use that word because it makes it sound like that whatever they've written to justify their insanity somehow has validity because we call it a manifesto.
It imparts like a profundity to what they do, which is just, any idiot can just scribble for hours and hours and hours. It almost provides the legitimacy, and I was really, really surprised. I was really taken by surprise by how much support there was for this fellow. So maybe I've underestimated how much people are unhappy with insurance companies, but there's reasons why, and I'm happy to go into any of them.
You're absolutely right about it. And what's interesting, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch a lot of it over the weekend, as I told you during the break. We were down in Florida, so we didn't really watch TV at all, but. We did have the news on sometimes because I'm a news junkie. And so when we were riding around, we would put it on a little bit. But the very people in this country that decry political violence, and that's really what this is political violence. At its base level, one man took another man's life by shooting him in the back like a coward.
Right.
But at the end of the day, this was also political violence. And the very people that decry political violence... and were so mortally wounded, say, for example, over January 6th and other events, are the very people that are out there endorsing what this guy did as though this is a reasonable outcome over a disagreement, essentially over money.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also, it's very much a blame the messenger thing. We had it's not yet 15 years ago, or barely 15 years ago, that there was a push made to expand health care, essentially by bringing millions of previously uninsured people into the system, many against their will, some not against their will. But what happens is when you bring tens of millions of people into health care, right, and force them to be insured, what happens? Well, resources get strained, and when resources get strained, you get stricter reviews. There's a handful of reasons why claim rejections are up, and one of them is Obamacare. That's what it comes down to. Obamacare, AI, a number of other factors, which are why we're getting these more and more rise of rejected claims. And inflation is another reason. But all of this stuff winds up being visited on one guy who's walking on the street and gets shot in the back. And this guy gets treated like a hero for doing so. It just blows my mind.
Well, it's vigilantism. And at the end of the day, you know, and so much of this is driven by the government. When my wife, Dee Dee, and I moved to Maine in 1985, there were 32 different health insurance companies. And rates here were extremely competitive to get health insurance. When Dee Dee was pregnant in 1990, I actually worked with a person whose name escapes me now, but she was a lovely human being. And I said to her, look, you know, I'm going to be a new dad. There's going to be concerns, you know, with a baby. There always are. And we need the best possible policy we can find. But we also need to be able to pay their premiums every month. And she was able to sit down with me and go through a multitude of options because there were a multitude of companies that were providing various health insurance. Today in Maine, I believe there are only four, there might only be three companies that are offering health insurance in the state because around 1993, the state legislature decided in their infinite wisdom, and in the wisdom of those people in their own minds is in fact infinite, is that they were going to protect the people of Maine from the big bad insurance companies. So they were going to force guaranteed issue no matter what. And they were going to have community rating so that the variance between some groups and other groups was very small. And then all the things that used to be riders, like vision care and dental care and maternity care and this, that, and the other, they piled them all into a policy so that you would absolutely be covered no matter what. The problem was is that in doing all of the genius things they did, they drove the cost of health insurance policies out of sight. So even though we're protected from the insurance company, we couldn't afford to buy them. So their infinite wisdom never ceases to amaze me.
It's just astonishing to me. And of course, everything you said is true. And I see the same in New York and New Jersey and all that. And, you know, it's just amazing that the same group of people who are endorsing this sort of political violence were absolutely, you know, they were banging the gong for Obamacare, which entrenched insurance companies so deeply, and basically gave into their lobbying power by creating a plan which essentially sought to stabilize their revenue. So by forcing Americans to purchase insurance, by bringing millions and millions, tens of millions of people into the system, right, it basically stabilized their revenue. But the thing is, we didn't have the addition of more resources. So what starts to happen, of course, is you get more rejected claims. I mean, the only alternative there is to ask these companies to basically operate unprofitably if you don't deregulate and allow more companies to compete. So both ways, whether it's deregulation that causes this concentration of power or whether it's establishing these programs, either way, this is an issue that's created by the very people who are thumping, you know, and praising and all this stuff—the murder of an insurance executive. I mean, they're insane. They're insane.
And I know we're talking about health insurance, and I know we're talking about the violence that has been perpetrated and cheered on by many factions of this country because of the insurance. But I'll give you another example. On January 1st, after our governor completely lied to the people, broke her word. We will endure the largest dollar amount tax increase in all of Maine history starting on January 1. Governor Mills had promised twice in the first and second election that she would not raise taxes on the people. She's done it in a lot of minor ways that she hid, for example, solar subsidies in the electricity bill, packaging tax so the grocery stores pay it and then we ultimately pay it ourselves, transfer facility fees and all kinds of things. But this is an actual tax that will be imposed on people's income and their paychecks. And so I had proposed, and it was a modified new idea. When I say that, I mean it was not brand new. There are other places that have done something like this. But there was some nuance to my proposal. So they created the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act, which, according to the advocates, will allow about 166,000 Maine people out of 1.4 million who currently provide care to be able to receive 12 weeks of paid leave to care for a loved one. So I suggested that, one, that plan would be very expensive and very costly to the Maine taxpayer, and it is. Two, it will serve a very small percentage of the people in the state. Therefore, we're paying broad taxes for a very small group of people. And three, there is a better way to do it. The insurance commissioner, for the purposes of law in the state of Maine, could have redefined the word disability to include this Paid Family and Medical Leave Act. In other words, time off. You have the disability. They could have, I know it's not a traditional disability, but they could have, for the purposes of insurance law, redefined it so that it encompassed people who were disabled from working because of caring for a loved one. And then that would have allowed the insurance commissioner to require that in a short-term disability policy, your time off to care for a loved one would have, in fact, be covered. That could have been offered through the employers to the employee. Not everyone would have had to have been impacted by it, but those that needed it would have been able to get it for very small money or even no money at all if the company chose to go that route. It would have been much cheaper, much more efficient, and it would have directly targeted a group that needs the support. And it was soundly rejected because doing this in the broad way was a way for the government to get more money.
Yeah. I mean, it's all the same thing over and over again. It's taking and it's taking and it's taking. And then what really, you know, grinds my gears is just that you get 10, 15, you know, for example, this thing that you're talking about now. You know, 3-5 years from now, people are not going to remember, and they're going to be treating this tax, this increased amount of money that they're paying to the government, as, you know, something that's expected, something that the government is entitled to. So I mean. What do we do? Do we pray for longer memories, for more recall of these things over time? I don't know, but this sort of like encroachment of these things and this sort of selective memory of people to have you know, cheered on, for example, this massive increase in insurance with all these unintended consequences, and now years later, you think that the insurance companies are the ones that are, you know, that got in this position to do this? They were placed in that position by the government and by our Congress. And it could be very disappointing, if you let it get to you. I guess you can sort of recharge every so often and start again. But I was really, really surprised by this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And, you know, I mean, look, let's face it. The problem that we face today is that government has become so big, and it believes, the people that operate the government, whether entrenched bureaucracy or elected people, they believe they have the right and the authority to dictate to us how we live and what we do, unless they're giving away something. And I'll give a good example here. Whomever the next governor is, and that'll be inaugurated in the state of Maine in 2027, must do the following. And I have no doubt we could get a federal waiver for it, because we get federal waivers all the time on our Medicaid program. In the state of Maine, we require nothing from a Medicaid recipient, nothing whatsoever. Medicaid is insurance, it's not health care, but it gives you the resource to be able to go and get medical care. And overwhelmingly in the state of Maine, people use, who are on Medicaid, use the emergency room, our most expensive care, for ordinary medical treatments like sore throats and that kind of thing.
Headache. Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. And that's what they use it for, instead of the emergency room being used for what it actually is, emergency care, an accident, a heart attack, all those kinds of things that are going on with somebody. We don't require our Medicaid recipients to have a primary care physician. Governor Mills, when she expanded Medicaid under the Obamacare Act, Governor LePage, her predecessor, had refused to do so, said she was doing it for two reasons. Reason number one, it would give the state more resources to fight the drug addiction problem. And two, that it would give people health insurance, which would provide them with health care so they could get regular checkups and catch things early before they become devastating to the family or costly for the people. But she didn't require anything of the recipients, so they are not getting regular checkups, they are not getting regular screenings or any of those kinds of things, because she just handed it out like you're in the candy store. Do you want a sample? And so that's the problem with government. When they give things away, they require nothing of the recipient. And in this case, not only would the recipient be better off by having a primary care physician where they got a regular checkup, but so would the people who are footing the bill so that things are caught early and it would save lives and would save money. It's a win-win-win if we were responsible in how we do this.
Yeah, I mean, my wife is a doctor, and she always says, you know how much money we would save? Do you know how much better off this country would be if we just really encouraged primary preventative care? You know, seeing a doctor once a year, even those people who go to the doctor and, you know, they don't want to get their blood pressure taken, whatever, just sitting and having a talk for 10 minutes with the doctor, something like that, would go a tremendous way towards, you know, avoiding these situations where people are, you know, when they finally appear at a doctor, you know, they're falling apart, or they use, as you mentioned, and I've heard about this for years now in the New York area, people using, you know, 911 and ambulances because they have a toothache or something. I mean, it's just it's unsustainable. And to cap it off, now you have people getting murdered because they're getting blamed for, you know, these decisions that were made years ago to basically, you know, these government interventions, which are shaped by lobbying instincts, or lobbying interests rather, you know, they're being characterized as greed or corporate overreach. So, yeah, I mean, I really had not known that things have gone this far, but shows we have a lot of work to do.
Well, we do. We have an awful lot of work to do. And ultimately, yeah, let's face it, what's going to happen to the insurance companies in this country if we continue on the path we're on? We're going to bankrupt them just as we're bankrupting the federal government, because everybody treats everything as like it's endless. The government acts like it can borrow endless money with no consequence. The people of the country, as long as they're getting what they want in terms of a handout or a subsidy, they're perfectly fine with the government going into debt to do all this stuff, and they keep their mouth shut, hoping no one will cut them off. But at some point, the piper will be paid.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a question of most major insurance companies either going out of business or having to be subsumed by the government. And then we will wind up with actual government health care and actual government insurance. And that's going to be, I mean, whatever you say about the insurance industry now, the creature though it is of regulation and government, it's going to be 100 times worse when it actually becomes part of, you know, Department of Health and Human Services or whatever else. Hopefully, some of the people who are heading into those positions now see it coming, and they can make some sort of preemptive changes now. But I mean, it's a lot to ask.
Well, let's face it. Why do the wealthy of the world come to the United States when they need a serious medical procedure done? Why do they come here? Because for the moment, we still have the best health care in the world.
It is still the only game in town.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the best health care in the world. But our government and the greed of certain people in this country are going to destroy this ultimately. I mean, my personal physician, Dr. Michael Champy, who at some point I want to hook the two of you up, because he has a model called direct primary care. He and another guy, Dr. Jack Forbush, up in Bangor, about 140 miles from here, they sort of pioneered this. I never will forget Mike. Mike's not only a my physician, and he literally saved my wife's life. If it weren't for him, she wouldn't be here. Him and the good Lord, he just would not give up on Dee Dee when she was so sick and finally found the path. But he pioneered this on April 1st, 2013, and he had a lot of trepidation about it. He does not take insurance as of that date anymore. He had a lot of trepidation as to what would happen, and, you know, people have health insurance, that's how they would cover their bills. But what he did in an exhaustive study is found that 30% of his practice was complying with insurance and then chasing the payments. So he decided if he went to a subscription-based medical plan that he could provide the level of care his patients desire and not fight with insurance companies and waste time on them. And it's worked unbelievably well. I believe that the future of medicine in this country ought to be a catastrophic health insurance policy that covers the big things, cancer, heart disease, you know, stuff like that, you know, things that are huge that a doctor in their office, but your regular stuff, you know, your oil changes, your tire rotation, that kind of stuff, that you go to your primary care physician for, and they can do it with a subscription model. And it's very inexpensive, and it's much better health care because the doctor literally has the time to spend with the patient.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not a healthcare economist, but of course, my work touches a little bit of everything, so I would be most interested in hearing about
that. I would really, I want to get the two of you together and have, you know, because I think that this model, and it's starting to sprout around the country, but it's small now, because let's face it, this model is a threat to the insurance companies, and it's also a threat to the government's control over your health care. So they put up every barrier they can possibly find. For example, when Dee Dee was so sick and she had to be referred out for health, you know how they do that. You have to get a referral from the doctor.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
he didn't take insurance, they wouldn't accept any referral for him. So we had insurance. So we had to go and designate another doctor to be our primary care physician so they could make the referral. And it was a big pain in the rear. And frankly, it was all a big joke. She did go see the doctor so the doctor could agree with the analysis of Dr. Champy and then make the referral. But what a farce that was. So we did pass a law in the state of Maine. It's affectionately known as Dee Dee's Law, where that's no longer the case.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, so this is one of the things that, you know, and along those lines with the doctor you mentioned and what you just mentioned about Dee Dee is that the one thing I have not heard over the last two or three days is, hey, you know, why don't you start a business that does this? Or why don't you, you know, lobby Congress to do that? Everything has been praise for the shooter, but nothing constructive, nothing productive, which I guess I should come to expect that, but I'm glad to hear that at least up in Maine, people are thinking about these things. So,
well, I think we are.
Good on you.
Hey, can you hang around or do you have to go?
I can hang around for about 15 minutes. Sure.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the jobs report. All right, we'll be right back with Dr.
Absolutely.
I was about to say Dr. Michael Champy, but it's Dr. Peter Earle. We'll be right back with The Economist. At ABC Maine, they don't just build buildings, they build people. ABC can get you on the right path to a successful career in construction.